Okay, so yesterday we started the quantization of gravity using the Dirac approach, and we did the first step, which is defining and finding the basic variables that we want in our theory, or we found one of them and talked about the other. And if we start with the connection A, we see that it's, because it's a field theory, the Dirac brackets are distributions or delta functions that aren't necessarily distributions, and we wanted to avoid integration because integration involves the metric, and that's going in circles. So we define the holonomy, which is in one, you can think of it as a one-dimensional smearing of the connection A, and it's defined as a parallel transport of a vector along a curve. So this is the definition, where the holonomy is this thing. Okay. So to find it, we use the definition of the parallel transport using the covariant derivative, which is the correct derivative to transport using the connection A. And well, I can write what we got. It was a bit too fast now.
No, it's okay. No worries. Depending on the content.
Okay. Okay, so I'll just write the expression for H.
Yeah,
is that fine?
Maybe you can.
Okay, so.
You can write maybe starting from this equation, then we found the differential equation and then solving it.
Okay, yeah, sure, I'll write the different. We found the differential equation, which is. Now we can solve it iteratively. And by doing this iteratively in the tutorial, we found the holonomy. To be the path exponential of the connection along the curve. Okay, should I write the other form with the sum, or is it?
No.
That's enough. Okay. So.
Okay, thank you. Here's the microphone. Back.
Sure.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. So, any question on this? So, as Barak just mentioned it, yeah, it's only one of the variable we have now, so we still need to figure out what is the other variable we are going to use to then go to the quantum theory, okay? And the second variable is what we're going to call the flux, so it's what we're going to see today. Then we need, of course, to check that the Poisson bracket between holonomy and fluxes are going to be simple enough because we want an algebra, because it's going to be then easier to quantize, because also you know that when you go to the quantum theory, this Poisson bracket has to become commutator. So if you have if you start with complicated Poisson bracket in the classical theory, then of course you won't be able to go very far in the quantum theory. And so then we will look at the quantity. So you see that here we introduced a curve to define the holonomy, because it's, as Barak remind you, it's just defined as a smearing of the connection on a one-dimensional object, which is a curve. And so then we are going to talk about graphs and edges. So in particular, first we are first going to focus on one given curve, so one given edge of a graph, and see what is the quantization of this variable for a given graph and then given edge, and then move to the when we will then the second step of the Dirac program will be to look at the constraint. So to first quantize find the operator associated to this constraint and then solve them. And of course, we won't be able to do that with only one edge. We will have to look at a complete graph. Okay, but for the first step of the quantization, to define the kinematical Hilbert space, we can really look at one given edge or what one given curve, okay, of a graph. Okay, so let's start by now looking at the second variable, which is the flux. And I'm going to give you the definition and then motivate a bit why this is so complicated. So today, yeah, it's going to be a bit, we're going to do some big calculation. So I hope you're ready for that. Okay, so we have now the holonomy. And the second variable I'm going to define is the flux, okay? So I'm going to call it, it's also associated to a curve, but we are going to see that as I, you remember that once you have chosen which of your variable are your configuration variable, so for us it's a connection, then you can choose on which object you're going to smear it. Then you know that the conjugated variable has to be smeared on d minus the dimension of your object you choose here, dimensionless object, okay? So here we are in two dimensions because we are on the on space in 2 plus 1. So 2 minus 1 is 1, so we also know that the flux is going to be smeared on a curve. But of course, it's not going to be on the same curve. Okay, I'm going to call it gamma. Even if here, then after that, you can see this object as related to this first, the same curve as at the holonomy, because we are going to see that the only non-trivial Poisson bracket we are going to get are when we have a relation between these two curves. Okay, so what is, so I'm going to consider, I'm going to explain what I'm writing. This object, okay, which is going to be the flux, and I'm going to tell you okay, so first, let's focus on this guy. So this guy, again, is a Lie-valued object. So when we don't you don't have any internal indices, this means that here you're just contracting again with the generator of the Lie algebra. Okay, well, here it's SU2. And of course, you remember that the conjugated variable of A is the densitized triad, okay? And here I'm just talking about the triad. So what is the relation here? You just remember that you have this epsilon BA, and so you can inverse more or less the relation, and you get. Okay, so this is the object, how it's related to the conjugated variable of our connection. And now here, this is the parallel transport. So how are my curves? So I was defining the holonomy H first on this curve gamma, where here, let's say it's the starting point. So a curve has to be oriented, and we will see that in the quantum state are going to be based on oriented graphs. Okay, so you really need an orientation. And here, I'm going to talk about the dual curve associated to this first gamma, which is my gamma star. And by convention, so this I can choose here this convention. And we are going to see that in fact everything we are going to define at the end is not going to depend on this convention. Okay, it's just to make calculation simpler and to see what. So let's say that this point S is just at 1/2. And it's the same if this curve is parametrized by S prime, okay, from, so here it's from S prime going from 0 to 1, okay, we are also, and we have this orientation here. So we have a transversal crossing. So we are going to see that why do we look at these two different cases is because it's the only case where we are not going to get a trivial algebra, okay, if we want to have some so it's the important case here. So here, yeah, you have this orientation. So what is important here is that it's not, the crossing is not at the end, the endpoints of the curve. Okay, otherwise you have some issue, and also you have a transversal crossing. Okay, meaning that your two curves are not collinear. And we are going to see why this is important in a moment. So, but so what is this object? Now, this object is a parallel transport from the point on gamma star, gamma. So it's a parallel transport from okay, so one point on this dual curve here to gamma zero. So do, can you see where this object, if I would represent, so this is related to a vector here. So if I want to put my vector here, where this vector is leaving, can you see that? So you see that this object is leaving at the point, let's say here. So the parallel transports at here and then go back here.
Okay.
Okay. So can you see? And this object is leaving at this point. Okay, for example. So where is the flux sitting? Is it sitting on gamma star or on using this parallel transport? So you see that we have a, here what we are doing, we are parallel transporting this. This object, okay, since it's a Lie-valued object, we know that it's transformed under the adjoint representation. So I think, yeah, so it's exactly this transformation we are using, that Barak wrote here, for this particular vector here, okay? So where is now this object leaving? Can you see that? If you use the parallel transform from this point to this point, what does it mean? This means that we are starting with a vector here, and we parallel transport it to, yeah, to gamma zero. Is that clear to everyone? Okay. So here, this object sits and so you will see that really then in loop quantum gravity, we are going to talk about graphs. And the graph are going to be the graph formed by this kind of curve. So the curve where the holonomy is living on, okay? So the gamma. And in fact, we are going always to forget about the dual curve because the dual curve is always going to be related to this gamma. So everything is going to be parametrized just in terms of the graph, okay? Where, and it's the graph on which the holonomy is going to live on, okay? So these are our configuration variables. Okay, so what does it mean though that we have this kind of crossing? This means that here, if we look at the determinant, and we are going to come back to this object, between the tangent vector at each curve, of each curve, okay. So this gives you the tangent, this object has the tangent vector to each curve, okay. This determinant is greater than zero. So because the tangent vector here at each curve is positively oriented at the intersection. Okay, that's why we have this orientation here, if you look at. Explicitly, what is this? You look at the determinant of, you have two components. And here, the fact that we have inserted here holonomies and make this object live here, but it's also in very important to ensure that the local transformation under gauge internal rotation is also compatible with the one of the holonomy, okay? So here, because of this holonomy, we can show that E gamma under, so is going to be transformed as and this is the behavior under internal rotation. Okay, so this terrible formula here is what we define as the flux. Okay?
Sorry, I still don't get why it sits on gamma zero.
Okay, so you see that here you start with something on the curve, and then you parallel transport it to, you use the parallel transport. This is by definition what I call the parallel transport from the point where your object is to this point.
Okay,
so this just means that what you're doing is really taking your vector from this point and you parallel transport it to this
using
point.
Using the curve and the dual curve, I mean.
Yeah.
Till S equals 1/2.
Okay. So this is the definition of the flux. But now let's see how we can use it, because of course you're never, except to the calculation we are going to do today, which is we are going to compute what is the Poisson market between these two objects, but then you're never going to use again this kind of formula, okay? Especially.
And the dual curve is not unique. I mean, you can choose.
Yeah, but we will see that in fact. So here we choose this intersection point, okay?
Yeah, and but this intersection point you need, but you can change the curve.
Yeah, but then it's not going, the final result is not going to depend on it. So you just need, it's just to visualize that we choose one, but then since it's independent of this choice, then you don't care about which one you choose, okay? So that's why here, especially I have specified this point because it's going to be useful to do the calculation. But again, it's just really a tool to do it. So.
Can you just try to explain the integration? I don't think I get. So I get what you're saying, that you transport this vector from wherever on the curve it is back to gamma zero. But what do we do with the integration? Like, is it like every point?
Yeah. So it's curve? This means that we are looking at each small vector here on this curve. It's going to be parallel transported, but you see, you still have the dependence on this, and we integrate over all this. This is the integration over the dual curve, okay? Yeah, good question. Okay, so let's just. So now the important point to check is what is the Poisson algebra here? And for this, to do this calculation, I want to extract a component of this object, remembering that this is, again, a Lie-valued object, okay? It's a matrix. So I want to extract a component. So for this, we need to remember that the metric on the Lie algebra can be seen as using the trace, where here we look at the generator, where again I remind you that you can define this SU2 generator or SO3 generator by choosing the Pauli matrices. Okay, and this gives you so of course this, what we call this metric is negative but so now this means that I can extract component on Lie-valued object. Okay, because here it's a bit hidden where is tau, so meaning that I will define my component j as, so I need to multiply by this minus 2 here and then take the trace of the object I'm interested with, because what does it mean that it's a levalued object? Okay, and this means that this is can be written like this. Okay, so here then you get the delta. And then you get the component j. Okay, so now using that, we can define the flux component. Where I want to define, so I consider this huge formula and I want just the component. Again, this is, at the end, it's a matrix, okay? And so if I'm using this integration, what I get using again the trace is that I get minus 2 the trace of tk, and then I have the inverse. So this, I'm taking the trace of this object, epsilon bk, which is leaving at this point, okay, so where this comes from is just exactly this expression where here I replace this by this, okay, and so now taking the trace, of course, these are SU2 group elements, so this means that they are more or less exponential of t times tj, okay, so you have some tj inside, that's why you cannot put them out from the trace, okay? This object, of course, are defined in terms of this generator, these are the generator of SU2, okay, it's kind of exponentiated object, so you cannot put them out, so now we need to figure out how we can simplify this. But this is just a number, so I can put it out of the trace. And so this is going to give you the component. So if you look at this, and then you contract again with this object, so plus this one, then what you get here is the component of and it's a component j, okay? So here, what does it mean here? This means this is the component j of this rotated object, which is a Lie-valued object, okay? And if you remember, yesterday we have seen that we have an equivalence between the this representation, the adjoint representation of SU2, and the vectorial representation of SO3 on their Lie algebra, okay, on its Lie algebra. So what does it mean? This means that we have seen that this is equal, so what is the, where now I use the rotation associated to this H, okay, because what I call rotation, in fact, here is just the vectorial representation. Here it can be seen as a spinorial representation, if you want, it's a 2x2 matrices, and then here I'm going to go to the vectorial representation. So you also see that, I think, in the second tutorial, this kind of relation. So this means that this is as rotating this object, okay? So here, it's in the spinorial representation. I'm acting with the adjoint representation, but since this is a vector, I can also act. It's equivalent to act with the rotation on this vector. Okay, so this means that now I can simplify using this expression. Here, what I get is I'm rotating bk, so which is still leaving at the same point. And I'm still left with this, the measure, of course, and the epsilon bA. the gamma. Okay, so this is what I'm going to use as the definition of my component of the flux, okay? So you may say that it's not a much nicer formula, but it's just so the rotation acting on this thing as a vector and then contracting with. Okay, so here instead of, so this is really the rotation associated to this holonomy, okay? Are you familiar with this kind of transformation going from one representation to the spinorial to the vectorial representation or not so well? Yes or no? Yes? Okay, good. Okay, so now let's look at, we want to compute, so I'm not going to do all the calculation in detail because it's a quite technical one and long one, but I'm going to give you the steps in case you want to also check, and I think it's some, tools that you could use in other contexts, so yeah, it's just technical things, but it's good to see how you can do it explicitly. So just to remind you, this is a matrix, and in fact, it's usually you compute the, so this is component, so here it's also a matrix element, but we just forgot about the indices, okay? So here it's a matrix element, but I'm not going to write the indices right now. At the end, when we will summarize what is the Poisson algebra, of course I will give them to you, but to do the calculation, it's just going to make things more complicated. So I remind you that we have this kind of drawing where here it's S prime, and here it's gamma, and here it's gamma. And so here, what is going to be non-zero is only, we only need the part near this intersection point for the holonomy. Okay, so I'm going to split the holonomy around this intersection of gamma and gamma star. Okay, so I can write here H using the property I tell you yesterday. You remember when you have two holonomies, you have two edges, let's say E1 and E2, of course you can glue them together to construct the holonomy associated to this complete edge E, which is formed by E1 and E2, just by multiplication. So here it's what I'm going to use. So here it's the holonomy starting from one point here and going to gamma zero, okay? So I want to first consider this part, then I'm going to look close to this intersection, and then, so I will have this part which is going to interact with this E of the holonomy, and then these two edges, part of the edges, are going to be not going to affect this Poisson bracket, okay? So this is the way I want to. So I'm starting again from, so if I'm starting from one, okay, so from the end here, then I'm going to 1/2 plus a small epsilon, meaning I'm going here. And yeah, let's put a divided by 2. It's going to be easier then. And then I'm really interested in this section of the going from a bit after the intersection to a bit before. Okay, so minus now, and then H gamma going to the origin, zero. And of course, these two here, so maybe there is a confusion. Yeah, I'm not, there is a mistake. Sorry about that. Yeah, so I'm starting again. So the H I'm considering here, sorry, is the basic variable we defined. So it's the H, the holonomy living on this H, okay? So it's not starting here. It's not the holonomy which is...
Because the other is gamma, gamma.
Sorry. This one is in the definition of the flux, but it's not the holonomy that we are going to consider as a basic variable to define. The theory, the one we are going to, we want to compute the Poisson bracket with the flux is this H living on the gamma, okay? Sorry for the confusion. So here is really h starting from 1 to 0, okay? So that's why I'm starting. Here it's really the component s is equal to 1, and it's on this gamma curve, okay? So here the decomposition I'm doing is more, I'm looking at this part, then here it's 1 half plus epsilon, and this point is 1 half minus epsilon. So I'm just, it's exactly what I was doing here. Instead of two parts, you have three parts. So this edge is going to be cut in three parts, okay? Yeah.
And since the flux is sitting at gamma zero, why would we expect that further pieces of the gamma curve, like the autonomy, would have some kind of top to it in some way?
Yeah, so it's, you're right, it's sitting at gamma zero, but it's depending on this, on all this.
Yeah,
this,
and all that, but when we do the Poisson brackets with the autonomy of the other curve, that's why I'm saying that it's...
Yeah, but in fact, we are going to see that, so how do you see that? It's, so it's just because, so what is important is, so what is, so we're starting with, okay, with A and E. And only this Poisson bracket is not commuting, okay? So here I want to compute the Poisson bracket between this new variable written in term of E and H written in term of A. But you're right that here I have some A, but in fact, in the Poisson bracket, they don't care, okay? Because the A, with the A is not going, is going to be zero. So the only non-trivial contribution is going to come from the fact that here, indeed, you have some triad entering in this definition, and here you have the connection. So you see that the triad here is really leaving, so it's pi transported, but you integrate over all these points, okay? So in fact, we're going to see that indeed the only contribution is going to be here, okay? Because the A is going to live in the H is going to live only on this curve. And here you have all these contributions, so it's really around here that it's going to be not. Okay? So you're not convinced, or you're convinced that these two parts are going to commute with the flux? So these two parts are going to commute. With the flux. And here, since we are looking just at the holonomy on a very small section of our H, okay, we can do this approximation here. I'm going to go to the first order, and I'm going to do, so it's exactly the same expression that Barak wrote here when you solve for the first iteration, okay? Here, and we can do that here because the length of the curve is very small, so here this can be approximated by the identity minus the first integration starting from a bit before the intersection, just a bit after the intersection. Sorry, this is epsilon. We're here, so I'm going to write explicitly what is this H. So you need the generator of SU2, then you have the tangent vector to your curve. Which is contracted with the connection, so it's exactly, and then these are going to be order of, okay, so it's exactly what was written there. Okay, so now I'm going to compute, so I need some space, so let's use maybe this blackboard and leave the definition here. So the only part which is interesting me now is going to be this small interaction. So if I compute this Poisson bracket, what I want to do with the component J of the flux and a matrix element of the connection, I'm going to get, so I can put on the side this first holonomy, then I have this generator here because I'm taking the and now I have some integration. So I'm still integrated over, for the definition of P, I have the integration over gamma star. And for the definition here, at the first order, I have this integration around this intersection point. And now I'm going to write what is the definition of the component of the flux using the rotation. So I have some this curve, and then this comes from the definition of the holonomies, this second one, and then the only Poisson bracket I'm going to get, so it's between this E here that is here and this A, okay? So I have this E contracted with the B here and the K here, which is living at on gamma star of S. And then I have the A coming from here, which is contracted with this L here and this C here, okay? So I have A, L, C, and this one, this guy is living on gamma S prime, and then it's ds. Okay, so this is a big calculation I have to do to compute this Poisson bracket. So let's give you the steps here, what we're going to do. So the first step is, of course, to simplify this. And you know that this is going to give you a delta. So it's two-dimensional on the curve between okay, the dependence on the point. And then you have a delta BC and a delta KL. Then the other thing to notice is that this guy here is exactly this determinant. Okay, that we are here. So this is this guy. You can check. So this is the second step, is to notice that this guy, so I don't need maybe to rewrite explicitly, is the determinant of, so this is a one and this is a prime. So I don't know if you see the difference. And so, because you know that this gives you the area of the parallelogram formed by this tangent vector at the intersection, okay? And by assumption, this is greater than zero. Then the next step is, why is it important to notice this? Is because here, so you see that you have a delta. It's like a delta of a function. And the delta of this function, so here we are going now to use at the third step, to use that we can always, when we have a f, delta of f of y, this is then given by 1 over the determinant of f prime, the derivative of f. Okay, and so if you do that for this delta explicitly, then of course you're going to get 1 over this determinant. Okay, so they're going to simplify. So here, using these three steps, then instead of this, all these terrible things here, you just get a delta of S, S prime. So you see that it looks quite terrible, but everything simplified in a nice way. And then you can take the limit. So these are the first. So everyone is following more or less what I want to say, then the fourth step would be to take the limit epsilon goes to zero. And then the fifth step is again to remember this relation between the rotation, so which is the vectorial representation of SU2 and its spinorial representation, its one alpha representation. So here we have, if we take epsilon goes to zero, then here what we get is this rotation matrix evaluated at the point one alpha, okay, at the intersection. So here we are interested in this matrix here, evaluating at S is equal to one half, and then we still have this matrix element here, this generator here. And then if you remember the relation, the equivalence between vectorial representation and spinorial representation, we have this equality. Minus one times, where here the points are just matrix multiplication, and then H gamma. So if now you use this again, you compute with that, then what you get. So now we can conclude. Mm-hmm. So maybe everyone is following, or? Okay, so pretty. So don't worry, I'm not going to do the other calculation like this. The other one, in fact, are going to be quite. One of them is going to be obvious, but the other. Okay, so if now you simplify everything here, you can recombine this holonomies together. Okay, what you get is just that. Is equal to, where here this holds that matrix component Y, so it has to be read more or less. You had to, in fact, add that here it's a component. In fact, it's not, sorry, more like, since this is a big matrix, yeah.
Sorry, I cannot see the image.
It's here, so MN, let's call it. So I think it's more here. Yeah.
It's E0? Oh, E cam, okay.
Sorry, yeah.
No, sorry, I'm blind.
Okay, so this is the first Poisson bracket, and I'm not going to compute really explicitly all the other, because so what are our variables? Now our variables are, so we started here with A and E, and now we have some H and some flux. So of course, we just check this Poisson bracket, but we also need to check H with H and E with E. Okay? So what can you say about, so this one is okay, we just computed. What can you say about H? So if now we consider two different holonomy, so let's take again matrix element, and H we can be living on a different curves or on the same, of course. What can you say about this Poisson bracket? Yeah.
It vanishes.
Yeah, why?
Because H is just a function of the connection and.
Yeah, so okay, so here you only have, everything is defined in terms of the connection, you don't have any triad. So since A with A is zero, here you get that this is zero. Okay, and so then we still need to, but what can you say about this one now? of course, I'm not asking you the result, but can you say it's going to be zero or not?
It's non-zero, because like in the definition, it has connections in the trias, so you don't really expect it to vanish.
Yeah, and also you're expecting that it's going to satisfy the Jacobi identity. So for example, if you, so I'm not going to compute it explicitly, but just a heuristic argument could be that here you want that it satisfy the Jacobi identity, okay, which is going to be, so you can even guess what is the result if you just use the Jacobi identity here. Because this is going to be given, so let's put in this, is otherwise I'm going to be lost. Let's just consider the same gamma for simplicity for the moment. All the other, of course, are going to be zero. So this is, and then we have a minus. Sorry, with H, and again, AG. Okay, and this one we computed, okay? So we know that this is going to be, again, it's going to be related to H. Okay, so we're going to get again a HE, and here it's also HE with a, each time contracted with a generator of SU2. So here what you get at the end is something like minus H TK TJ TK. And so you see that here what you get is the commutator of this SU2 generator. Okay, of course you can. So this means that here you have something like H gamma, and then you have a minus epsilon K J L T L. Okay, so you can guess that here you're expecting for this one to be proportional to that times E. Okay, so and indeed the result is that here what you get is epsilon A K L E L. So here it's not really a proof. You can do it explicitly again doing this same kind of calculation, but I'm not going to do it a second time today. I think one of this kind of calculation per day is enough maybe for you. But you can guess using this Jacobi identity, asking that the Jacobi identity is satisfied for the Poisson bracket. Okay, so it's a way to guess. Okay, so now we have everything. So we haven't quantized anything yet, but we have our basic variable, and we have checked if the algebra, so at the classical level, is simple or not. So let's just summarize what we get here. And what is important is that what we call the closed algebra. And this algebra is quite well known. So as you can see, the E are going to just satisfy the Lie algebra of SO3. But then, so what do we get? So just summarizing, we have this H gamma. Let's consider one edge, OK? So for one curl gamma, so we have, again, gamma and gamma star, but we can just consider only the gamma here. So if we focus on just one curve, what do we have? We have that this is zero. Then we have that the E EJ gamma H gamma are going to give, and we have that the EJ EK gamma is epsilon JKL. Okay, nice. nice. So this is a closed. Algebra, so it's what we want. And so our phase space comes with a very natural simplistic form, and this is what we call so the tangent, so it's T star of SU2. Okay, so this defines our new phase space. So our phase space is defined the phase space we are going to quantize. Okay, we have chosen this new variable, and we have this nice simplistic structure associated with it. So this is just the phase space associated with, that we can see as associated with one edge. And so let's see what is the idea now. So we will see that heuristically, the Hilbert space associated of loop quantum gravity can be understood as a collection of certain Hilbert space associated with graph. Okay, and then of course, the Hilbert space of the continuum theory is going to arise from the individual graph spaces as a projective limit. Okay, so of course we are not going to go into these technical details, but here you can really see that this is a truncature of the theory. You are just considering some finite degrees of freedom, but then if you consider all the Hilbert space associated to all possible graphs and take a projective limit, you recover a continuum theory, okay, with the infinite number of degrees of freedom. So let's just see what we did. So we had continuous variable. Because I'm not sure I'm going to start now with the quantification. So let's just try to summarize to make things clear. So we start with this continuous variable. Then we replace them by this holonomy and this flux leaving on one edge, and we are going to see that we are going to talk about graphs with many edges. So here on each edge, we are going to see that we have, if E is this edge here, so this is a graph gamma. And then what are we, so this is still the classical level, okay? So we introduce this graph to smear our variable, and we will show that in fact we are not going to lose any information, okay? In particular, you have seen in the tutorial yesterday that if you consider all possible closed loops on a manifold, okay, then you're going to recover all the gauge invariant information about your connection, okay? So it's what you're interested with. Because of course, starting with all these variables, you remember that you don't only have interesting information, you also have all this gauge information that to go to the quantum theory you want to get rid of, okay? So then at the quantum level, what is going to happen here, to summarize this, we are going to work with this, what we call holonomy flux algebra, and we are going to term this. So what we're going to do tomorrow is that we're going to see which kind of operator can be this variable. And we are going to, each graph, we are going to associate Hilbert space, H gamma. And it's going to be described with what we call spin network. Okay, so a spin network is really just a graph with some decoration at the quantum level. Instead of this variable, we are going to get quantum number associated to this graph. And then, of course, to go to the continuous kinematical Hilbert space, so this is still at the kinematical level. Then, of course, we will have to add. So then, if you want to go to the continuous kinematical, and not just here, this truncation, kinematical, then you will have to take a projective limit of this graph Hilbert space. Okay. But what we are going to do, we are mostly going to focus on a given graph, okay, for the moment. Especially that, yeah, in 3D, we can really do that since everything is topological. So what we are going now to do is, so we are at this level, okay? Now we have graph, and we have variable associated to this graph. And we are going to quantize them. So this means that we are going to work with operators. So what are the operators associated to these basic variables? These are our basic variables now. So this is still in the first step of the Dirac program. And then the second step will be to look at the constraints. So then just on a given graph, what can we say if, so first, can we write the Gauss constraint as an operator? And can we write the flatness constraint as an operator? So this will be the second step of the Dirac program. And then the third step is to find states which from the kinematical Hilbert space, which are annihilated by these two constraints. And so we are going to focus just on a given graph. Of course, we cannot focus just on one edge, as we're going to see. So then need to solve the constraint. Okay, so these are going to be the next step. So tomorrow, we are going to focus just on what are the operators associated to these basic variables. And then I think on tomorrow, on Thursday, we will, tomorrow is Thursday. Okay, now it's Friday, we have a special lecture. Okay, so that's why, so tomorrow I will look at this as, so I think I can turn this